Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Okay, so it's Saturday night. Conditions in the world are still. People are experiencing a lot of difficulty, and it's playing itself out, and we are adapting to the circumstances. I mean, we've been doing pretty good at following various guidelines, but even for the those who are plugging into the live streaming, seeing this, can see how we're taking social distancing even a little bit more seriously, a little bit more spaced out in the hall here, physically, hopefully not spaced out in the mentally, present but distant. and just trying to adapt to change. just the other day I was a bit slow in, because time, of course, has a a tenuous sort of quality when there isn't that much to measure it by. And so I flipped the calendar the other day, the sort of four sangha calendar, and the new saying is, this year they're all sayings from Ajahn Chah, and the saying I thought was quite apt for the circumstances is sort of, whether liking or disliking arise, just see them all as uncertain. This is how to get close to the Buddha, to get close to the Dhamma. That's quite a, and of course I'm biased, but Ajahn Chah just has a way of saying things that I feel that are quite direct and meaningful, useful. And this, certainly this how Ajahn Chah expressed this sense of uncertain, unsure, changing, anicca, sense of not constant, but saying the this certain seeing uncertainty, and willing to be, comfortable with uncertainty. That's how we draw close to the Buddha. We're using the truth of the experiences that we have draw us close to close to the Buddha, close to the Dhamma. And thinking in terms of the Buddha was a while ago, week ago, Ajahn Yaniko gave a talk a week or so ago, gave a talk on just the qualities of the Dhamma. And in a similar way, you're reflecting on the qualities of the Buddha, and how do we draw close to the Buddha. And it's drawing close to the qualities that exemplify. The Buddha, and there's when we do the chanting, there's a whole array of them, the nine particular qualities. But when we do, they tend, if you sort of condense that a bit, then it falls into three particular categories. I'd say wisdom, compassion, purity, and those are the qualities to draw close to, where we have the Buddha as refuge, and I would say when we do the do chanting, we pay, say the closing homage, Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava. Those are pointing to the quality of saying Arahang as a one who is far from defilement. It's pointing to purity. Samma Sambuddho, the one who is fully awakened by himself, as pointing to wisdom. Bhagava is compassion. It's one who is bringing blessings. Is one who is a source of blessings or giving. So a sense of compassion. So these are qualities that we can be cultivating internally, or drawing close to internally, and that allow us to rely on the Buddha. They're not sort of in a historical sense, although one can still reflect on it. But these are the qualities that we rely on, and they're also qualities that need to be balanced. There needs to be a balance, so that there's a same thinking in terms of wisdom. It isn't just being clever or being intelligent. Or having a whole lot of knowledge, but having this discernment, understanding that sees things in their true nature, sees them as uncertain, accepts that fundamental uncertainty, and has that quality of balance. It's like thinking of because what I would say, like intelligence and being clever, having knowledge is highly praised or highly sought after in our culture. But sort of like having a high IQ, the intelligence quotient. But I think in Buddhism, we also put a lot of value on a high IQ, but it's more like maybe like an integrity quotient rather than in terms of a IQ, sort of an integrity quotient, a sense of trustworthiness. Which again, this is say like purity. Purity is not some kind of prissy purity, or some kind of absolutely otherworldly purity, but again, this intelligent, this integrity, and an intelligent way of living together as human beings, so that there is whether there's liking or disliking, just seeing it all as uncertain. That is, being able to come back, what is the true nature of things? This is the way it is. And there's this integration of wisdom, compassion, and purity that is, I mean, facing the world, facing circumstances with kind of a big heart, and not cramped and clouded or rigid or reactive. But reflective. This is a wisdom. Is one that is this ability to discern and respond skillfully to the world and to ourselves. It's not just an outward going perception, but it's also recognizing how do we interact with the world, and how do we live in the world in a skillful, responsible way. And that's really needed in times like this, having these qualities of relying on a refuge, having wisdom, compassion, purity as a foundation, having an integrity and care for ourselves and for others, because the ways of the world, I mean, in terms of as habitual and conditioned as it's, what we've gotten by with, we can't rely on that right now. We have to rely on internal qualities. Or this kind of problem, like a pandemic, can't really use the means of dealing with it. Especially on a global level or on a governmental level. Especially these last, 40, 50 years. I mean, problems have been, the solution to all the world's problems have been boiled down to basically economics and just try to create an economic system that where everybody's making money and keeping busy. And that's, at least, even if you still got problems, you still busy. Trying to solve the problems with the maxim of, you know, sort of like, yeah, when the going gets tough, the tough go shopping, you know. It's really not a, it doesn't work. It's not gonna happen. So how do we return to how do we have a foundation? So that this sense of drawing close to the Buddha, drawing close to the Dhamma is just so important, both on a personal basis, but on a social basis as well. These are qualities that are required. And they, having a perspective that we can hold things, because they, the Buddha was pretty blunt in his willingness to point to truth, and that has tremendous integrity and compassion when somebody is willing to just point to the truth of things. like a sutta comes to mind where Anathapindika is, because he's a very close disciple of the Buddha, and he is very ill and dying. He's on his deathbed, and Sariputta and Ananda go to visit him, and they ask him, "How are you doing? Are you getting better?" And he says, "Oh, I am not getting better. I'm getting worse." He describes, it's pretty gruesome how he describes the pain that he's discomfort that he's in. Definitely not doing well. And Sariputta gives him a teaching, sort of like, rather than sugarcoating it with, well, you know, everything will be all right, he was old, aged at this point. So he didn't cover over the fact that death was approaching, or, you know, this is the nature of having, it's like, a body. It's interesting in America, since 1951, nobody has actually died of old age. It was 1951. I don't know if you can make it illegal, but the procedure is, you couldn't put old age down on a death certificate. You had to have an actual cause of death. And it's, people didn't just die because they're old. You had to have an actual actual reason. So this is 1951. So nobody's died of old age in America. So the Buddha is sort of quite different, really, and the Buddha's teaching and really pointing to this is the way things are. There is aging, sickness, and death. But then in this teaching that Sariputta gave to Anattapindika, he walked him through, and it's almost like a almost like a guided meditation, where he walks Anattapindika through the sense basis, eye, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind. Okay, there's these faculties, and knowing that, and then not having consciousness dependent or clinging to it, and then okay, there's sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, bodily sensation, mental formations, and just knowing that, and not having consciousness dependent or clinging to that. The act of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and knowing that this is what there is, and not having consciousness attached to, clinging to that, and going through sense contact, going through the feeling that arises from sense contact, going through the, so all the realm of sense experience, going through body, feeling, perceptions, mental formations, consciousness itself. This is here. How not to cling, how not to let go, how to let go of the not attach, and four elements, this world, the other world, whole realms of whatever experience, refined or coarse, knowing but not clinging, not attaching. And in the sutta, Anattapindika is just overwhelmed with emotion in terms of joy at hearing a teaching that was so clear, allowed him to let go. And shortly after that, he passed away in this Dhamma supporting him. So being able to return to those fundamentals, those foundations of experience, and holding it all with with wisdom, with compassion, with purity, and as I say again, this a sense of wisdom, not just a clever analysis or an intelligent rationalization of anything, but a clear discernment based on seeing clearly. And compassion, this quality of kindness, of care, of concern, a recognition of the vulnerability of ourselves and others, by our very nature of being born and being subject to aging, sickness, and death, we're vulnerable, and learning how to care for each other, learning how to be, yeah, to be kind, to be generous, because yeah, life is actually fairly fleeting, and to have to live together with an integrity and purity in the sense of just not letting the unskillful, the unwholesome, the negative slip in and have dominate how we relate to ourselves and the world around us. And this sense of investigating, of seeing clearly, and then that quality of say of, you know, seeing clearly. And I think of the thinking of Sariputta's first introduction to Dhamma, this is a story that Ajahn Chah really was one of his favorite teaching stories of how Sariputta gained faith by seeing Asaji, who was one of the first. He was one of the first disciples of the Buddha. He was in the first group of five, and Sariputta, seeing Asaji walking on alms round in Rajgir, and just say, having this overwhelming faith come up and say, you know, either that person is, say, a fully awakened being, or he's a disciple of a fully awakened being, and went and approached Asaji and asked for instruction. And Asaji was quite humble, and he wasn't a big talker. So he just said that, I'm newly ordained, and even though he was fully awakened, he was an Arahant disciple. Newly ordained, and I'm not really that conversant with the teachings. I can't give you a great description. And one of the reasons why Ajahn Chah would quote this teaching or this circumstance was, he said, as practitioners or monastics, we don't have to say a whole lot to help people or to quote unquote teach people, but to live skillfully, to have an anchor within ourselves that has that makes an impression, Sariputta kind of pressed Asaji for if you can't give me a long teaching, give me a short one, and Asaji gave a short teaching. And it's actually the phrase is one that was used in all throughout the Buddhist world, ancient Buddhist world, in carving on rocks, and it says ye dhamma he tu pambava, e tang he tung tathagato, and then there's a couple other lines, and it's the of whatever phenomena one experiences, they said the Tathagata said, this is the cause and this is its cessation. Of whatever phenomena that has a cause, the top, the Tathagata has pointed to, has taught about the, this is its cause, this is its cessation, this is the teaching of the great Samana. So this sense of the Buddhist teaching being based on a causal principles, on conditionality, it's really fundamental. It isn't something, it isn't a belief system, it isn't a something that one say posits some sort of special power or influences like this. Coming back to those principles of conditionality, of cause and effect, not in a, say, in a linear cause and effect way, but in a sense of these are things arise because of causal processes, and they cease because of a causal process, and that very short teaching that was given by Asaji. Sariputta, on hearing that, he realized stream entry, and that was enough of a trigger to recognize. Oh, this is the way out, because he'd been. had dispassion and disenchantment toward the world already, had been living with another religious teacher in another religious tradition, and wasn't getting the answers he was looking for. But this he felt, oh, this is the catalyst. And so this sense of understanding how we approach living a skillful life, as well as living a life looking for freedom and liberation, we have to build it on a foundation of discernment and understanding, recognizing why does this come to be? Why does that? How does this cease? How does it end? And again, there's this causal process or conditionality that the Buddha is pointing to is particularly in terms of, say, how the Buddha expressed it in his first teaching, but in terms of the dukkha and the cessation of dukkha. And for 45 years, the Buddha taught over and over again, I teach only dukkha and cessation of dukkha. So that sense of suffering, discontent, dissatisfaction, dis-ease, and it's the resolution of that. And of course, how to do that, how the path leading to that. So that and this is really the crux of our human existence. What is it that creates fear? What is it that creates despair? What is it that creates delight and joy? What is it that creates clarity, peace? What is it that agitates? What are the causes and conditions for its arising and its ceasing? And that's where, say, discernment is. And then in terms of that resolution, but that's, the most compassionate thing that one can be doing. But one has to approach it with a real integrity. So that these qualities of, say, wisdom, compassion, purity, how it manifests in a moment-to-moment basis is really in this the sense of say, letting go, the sense bases, the objects of the senses, the objects, the sort of the perception of the world out there, the perception of self and me and mine, and that relinquishing, the loosening of attachment and clinging, seeing through that. But it's this. But then it comes. Not even that is. You know, starting to divide it up, but it's this manifestation of awareness, of mindfulness, of an attention that is alert and agile, and it's content within itself. The quality of knowing, and so like in the Satipatthana Sutta, where this establishing of a mindfulness of awareness, not clinging to anything in the world, and that's the opportunity that we have. So that this, you say, the circumstances and the situation that we're in makes it a bit more heightened, to use the opportunity skillfully, learning how to. We have to look after ourselves and to look after each other, look after the. This is not separate. That sense of care and attention. To offer that for reflection today.